Welcome back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak.
And I'm Lynn Ware-Peek, sitting in for Nell Larson today.
And joining, that's right, thanks for doing that. And joining us on the phone is Bo Uriona. He is with the Natural Resources Conservation Service. And the NRCS just put out a report, as they do around this time each year, the state of Utah's water supply, we'll call it. And Bo's here to join us this morning to talk about what is the state of the water supply, reservoirs, watersheds, snow melt, et cetera. Bo, thanks for joining us this morning on This Green Earth.
Thank you for having me.
So let's, I guess, get a thumbnail sketch of what the NRCS thinks of our state's water supply right now.
Well, you know, we had a pretty poor snow year overall. If you were to look at our current, like, percent of averages, it's going to be pretty dire. We had a pretty significant melt-off of our already dismal snowpack during the month of April. So we've gone from snowpacks of around 60, 70% of average down to about as low as completely dry to maybe like 50% of average. So it's especially dismal, but you do need to remember that that snow that came off, much of it has ended up in reservoirs and such, and will hopefully provide some irrigation water throughout the summer season.
Right.
And if you could talk about, Bo, the situation that we found ourselves in last year at this time was a good one with statewide water being about 140% of normal. So the reservoirs were full, which is really a saving grace for this bad year of snowpack. Where did it leave us, and how does it sort of bail us out of the current condition?
Well, you know, a lot is really dependent on the spring and how much water we get over the next month or two. We did have a significant carryover from last year due to favorable conditions both throughout the summer and as well as a really great snowpack last year. That carryover in the reservoirs allowed the reservoirs to fill more easily this year. And if you were to take a look at one of our reservoir maps, you could see that for the most part, most of our reservoirs are doing pretty well, with some of the more problem areas, southeastern Utah and such, still kind of hurting, even though the reservoir storage just isn't large enough to really do a whole lot from year to year and carry over. But that really has helped us to refill the reservoirs this year and hopefully allow the irrigation season to have the water it needs. But like I mentioned, a lot of that's really dependent on what kind of spring we get. If irrigation drawdown is high early, we could expect to see a lot of these reservoirs go dry earlier than we would hope.
So in the report, it says as of May 1st, the percent total snowpack that has been lost, let's say in Weber and Ogden Basin, is 63%, and in the Provo and Jordan, roughly the same, 64%. What does that mean exactly?
So what happened this year was we had a really warm winter, especially during the month of February, that put a lot of energy, like warmth, into the snowpack. We call that ripening of the snowpack. And what happens when you have that, even if you get more snow on it throughout, you know, the rest of the winter, when spring does roll around, it makes it so that the snow melts extremely fast. So what we've been seeing now is that really ripe snowpack that's just been sitting there since the middle of winter. You get a long, hot, sunny day on that, and it's really going to melt that snowpack significantly. So typically during the month of April leading into May, we would see, you know, maybe 20% of the snowpack disappear. But this year in particular, we've seen a really quick melt-off, which means that we don't expect to see, even at the high elevations, much snow sticking around too much longer.
Wow, that was going to be my next question. If we're looking at 63%, 64%, you're saying that we should be around 20s, in the 20s?
Yeah, that'd probably be a pretty average number. Wow. From year to year. It depends on the bigger snowpack you have, the more warmth it takes to heat up that snowpack and melt it.
Right.
So when you have a really small snowpack like we've had this year, it's much more typical for it to melt off faster. But that was also made worse by the fact that we had such a warm month in the winter that kind of got the snowpack primed up and ready to go as soon as we saw the warmth that we saw in April.
Well, I know, Bo, that you specialize in looking at snowpack and reservoirs and water, but what this all says to me is that the saturation of the soil is probably very low, and I think about all of our vegetation drying out way earlier, and then the effects and the threat of wildfire after that. Mm-hmm. Especially, I think that's kind of our biggest fear here in Park City. So talk a little bit about the soils. I notice that I think I'm going to have to start watering just at home in, you know, in my lawn or my flower beds.
You mean your Kentucky bluegrass that you grow?
I have very little, Chris,
okay,
very little.
Very good.
But nevertheless, I feel like, you know, some years you don't start watering until about the 4th of July.
Right.
And now we're early May, and I
that's getting
might
moved
have
up.
To. Yeah, it is. So could you talk about soils, please?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, as I mentioned, so much is dependent on the rains that we see this spring.
Yeah.
If we continue to get a decent amount of rain throughout the next month or so, that will help a lot because irrigators won't need to use the water, especially in these places where we have secondary water. They'll need to use less and less secondary water, and we should see less reservoir drawdown due to that. But conversely, if we were to have a very dry May and June, we could expect to see a lot of that water drawn down really early, really dry soil conditions, and, you know, the threat of wildfires is always going to be high in a year like this, but that could certainly make it worse. The soil moisture actually in the mountains right now is actually quite wet, but that's because of the active melting of the snow. As when snow melts off early, like we're seeing this year, especially at the lower elevations, that water will percolate through the ground into the streams or into the groundwater, and is no longer available to help keep the soils wet, which without rain can lead to the really dangerous fire conditions. So, you know, without being able to predict the future and what we see with rains to come, it's really hard to comment too much on what the fire season will be like. But it's certainly this year, more than ever, highly dependent on spring and early summer rains.
Hmm.
If you're just joining us, our guest is Bo Uriona. He's with the Natural Resources Conservation Service. We're talking about the overall look at our snowpack, snow melt, precipitation, reservoirs, and stream flow.
Mm.
Go into stream flow a little bit. What do lower stream flows mean for downstream? And, you know, I'm thinking of the Bear River and streams that are, you know, a direct feed into the Great Salt Lake, for example.
Sure. I mean, we're predicting, you know, pretty low, the forecast, especially for the Bear. Well, the Bear did better than much of the state. I should point that out, but still.
Because it's further north.
Even, yeah, the further north you went this year, the better overall we saw in snowpack. But the forecasts for the Bear are still not good. I mean, the overall Bear, we use a Swazi index, which is kind of a combination of both reservoir storage and forecasted flows, and we're at around the 70% range for the Swazi, which means that we had good carryover from last year, so the reservoirs are there. But if you were to look simply at the forecasts, the Bear River is looking probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 50 to 60% of average flow, which by the time you have irrigation draw out and stuff like that, we're not going to see a whole lot of water making it all the way down this year.
Hey, how long has the NRCS been putting together these state of water supply reports?
Well, we've been collecting data since the 1920s, and some sort of report has been established, whether it be based out of Utah or kind of, you know, it started out as a really small agency and has moved up. But in earnest, in Utah particularly, when we've started collecting electronically data, we've been able to really get a better idea of the sense of that. And that's been really going on since the early 80s.
Okay. And, of course, we speak with the National Weather Service periodically, and they confirm that, you know, Utah is warming some 3 to 4 to 5 degrees, depending on where you are in the state, over the last 10, 20, 30 years. That's obvious. Are you seeing similar trends in precipitation in watershed dynamics going on?
Yeah, our data set just isn't quite long enough to be very definitive in that realm. Our data set's really not the greatest data set for true climate research, but it does help set the benchmark for now that we can compare to other studies such as tree ring studies and such that can tell us a little bit more about those particular issues.
Okay, but I guess what I'm trying to get at is it you're seeing, like, last year we had a very wet, we'll call it a wet year, above average. This year it looks like, so far, obviously anything can change at any time, we're below average. Maybe the year before was also below average. I mean, do you see wider variations going on?
To some degree, but again, with our data, it's hard to parse out exactly any trends that would lead you to any real definitive answers about that. We certainly in the last decade have seen some of the highest snowpack years and some of the lowest snowpack years on record. And that's going all the way back to the 1920s.
Right. So big variabilities.
Certainly. The variability has been quite high, but we've also seen many, many average years in the last 30 years or so. So it's, we just don't really have the record set to comment on that too much, but anyone can look at the data and say, yes, that the variability from one year to the next has been very extreme. Whether you can extrapolate that into the future, our data set's not going to help you with that.
Okay.
Bo, I'm wondering if the Natural Resources Conservation Service looks at things like watershed as it changes with these extreme weather events. And I'm thinking about, I'm having a hard time coming up with one right here in Park City, but I have a friend who lives in the Sun Valley area, and they had this extreme flood. Well, they had this huge rainstorm while the ground was still frozen, and her home was flooded, and not even in a floodplain at all, because the streams breached, the soil couldn't absorb the rain at the rate it was falling. And it makes me think about these kinds of events and quick runoff, watershed, you know, losing the snowpack very quickly, and then the need to possibly adapt and, you know, create reservoirs that are higher up at higher elevations to capture some of this runoff instead of having it just go downstream. What do you think about that?
You know, a lot of what you're talking about is probably more a direct result of urbanization and not being able to percolate the soils into the ground during like on a parking lot, for example, non-porous areas. Rain on snow events are notorious for causing flooding. That's a whole other thing. That will happen. That's always happened. As far as creating reservoirs upstream, it's interesting you say that because actually the policy for a long time has actually been to get rid of these high elevation reservoirs because it was actually found that they weren't doing a whole lot to lessen the effect of dampen those floods. If you go into the High Uintas now, you can see that most of the really high elevation reservoirs have been notched at the dam to just let the water flow through. That's not to say that there are retention basins that are needed. And I think if you go to many ski resorts these days, you will see retention basins being an integral part of the planning. But some of the issues you mentioned are definitely more of an urban planning issue than a forestry issue, I guess you could say.
Right. But again, I'll say it in a warmer world, you say it best, these rain on snow events may become more common, and so they have to be taken into consideration with respect to development or floodplain definitions, et cetera. So everything is in play. Everything's changing in a state of flux, and rain on snow events are something that needs to be considered more. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I would say that any developer out there these days is probably not, their first interest is not protecting homes 20 years from now.
Right.
Those kind of design considerations are certainly maybe not making it into every community that's being put out there these days.
Right.
So, I would 100% agree that that's something that should be looked at more critically.
So this is something we talk about in Park City, impervious soils or impervious surfaces. Mm-hmm. And the more impervious surfaces you have, the more you're charged. And it was interesting. I was
charged for stormwater.
For stormwater, right. Yes. And I was at this conference and I saw this vendor booth and it was it looked like, you know, brick pavers. But right. It was this whole system that was designed that went down, I don't know, a couple feet.
Yeah.
And I can't describe it really well, but the whole idea behind it was that it's not an impervious surface. So you would take an entire parking lot and do this system on it, and
right.
it requires very little maintenance, but also what you're getting is the water percolating down.
It's a pervious surface.
Right.
Surface.
Right.
And you're not creating as much runoff. You do have to manage it. Because as environmental engineer, I've come across these options,
mm-hmm.
and you do have to manage them from weed control or grass control. You still have some permeability issues, but it's a different set of issues. But at the end of the day, you're just creating less runoff. You're allowing percolation to continue, and so those are great ideas. They can be a little costly. There's a premium to them.
Yeah, I think
right?
Like
as an engineer,
four times
okay.
what it costs to pave.
Okay, but. You would be saving, you might be the prudent thing to consider. It's a good investment in those areas where you're at risk for where we had, you know, where 1 in 100 year storms are now becoming 1 in 50 year storms.
Right.
And you're seeing those frequencies changing. Sorry, Bo. Lynn and I are off here.
I actually just noticed the other day a place that had put in a pervious asphalt parking lot is now carrying it out, and because it kind of got torn up, and they're putting in those brick pavers that you were just speaking of. So
right.
The technology is really coming along with those, and I, you know, sadly there are people that get caught holding the bill as they try to early adapt.
I know.
To this, but in the end, I mean, you're going to subdue the peak flows. You're going to be able to use smaller pipes in the storm drains.
Right.
It's going to cost less overall.
Yes.
Especially, you know, in a mountainous area like we have, and people just want to keep building higher on the hill. So once you start building high on the hill, you really get the water moving down okay. quick, and it changes the storm drain.
Right.
Yeah, it's an interesting conversation. And come to think of it, they were talking about they were working with Summit County on a certain building, and for the life of me, I can't remember which one it was,
but
anyway, so you'll be seeing these, if you see a large parking lot with what looks like brick pavers, this is probably this pervious surface, and also I think it's a filtration system to, you know, so the motor oils and things dripped onto it, it kind of acts as it cleans, it filters
right.
as it goes down.
But, right.
Bo, before we let you go, I wanted to ask you, you know, as you're compiling all the data from this general outlook that the Natural Resources Conservation Service has done, what surprises you the most? Is there any one thing from this year's report?
Well, I mean, really the biggest surprise in a year like this is just looking at how last year we were abundantly oversupplied with water, and how quickly we've gone to a needing to really get a conservation message out there. And it really just goes to show that from one year to the next, regardless of how much water we have, keeping conservation in mind is just extremely important, because we can go from having all the water we'd ever need to looking at water restrictions within a year to 2 years. It really just needs to be something that's always on people's minds.
Yeah, and hey, week to week, things can change. Starting Thursday, we may have showers on a daily basis for the next 4 or 5 days. And like we say, things can change quickly from year to year, from month to month, season to season. You know, and so...
Sure. Yeah, sure, I'm fixing up my sprinklers this weekend to get them ready to go, so I'm sure it'll rain for the next month.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's right. And, you know, for us lay people, unlike you, Bo, who has all this data at your fingertips, I monitor the condition of the trails. And I'm already seeing the trails in Park City bone dry, dusty, and here we are May 8th.
There's your own trend analysis, Lynn, right?
There we go.
You see that? Experiential like that.
Yeah, so I'll be looking forward to some rain as well.
Bo Uriona, he's with the Natural Resources Conservation Service. Bo, where can people go to get a copy of this State of Water Supply report?
I would suggest just to Google the Utah Snow Survey. Everything's available off of our landing page, and we're putting out new products all the time, so I encourage people to get in, dig in, and take a look at what we put out.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much for taking the time to chat with us this morning on this Green Earth.
My pleasure.
All right, well, let's take a break for some underwriters and sponsors. When we come back, we've got a couple of news items to cover. Stay tuned. We'll let you know when we come back. It's